no helicopters have been procured for me to go to golf course. Thank you.
I've never said he wasn't a great politician. I'm just saying he's a cop.
It's supposed to be an interview.
How'd you play out there today?
Well, I found the conditions challenging, mostly because there's no grass on the golf course, but there never has been.
I'm thinking about the swag bag, and I have high hopes for the swag bag.
When you got three crevices on the green, your course is trash.
What's going on, folks? Welcome back to the Beltway Golfer Podcast. I am your host, Alex Dixon. This is episode 88. For this episode, we've got Mr. Joel Wyman, who is the course architect for the renovation of Woodmont's South Course, Woodmont Country Club in Rockville, Maryland, which is hosting the United States Adaptive Open next week, Monday, July 7th through Wednesday, July 9th. Tickets are free, no ropes. Going out and watch these impressive competitors take on Woodmont South. If you're not familiar with Mr. Wyman's work, he has done a ton of work throughout the Capital Region. He started his own design firm just a couple years ago, but led up the design side of the house for McDonald and Sons for 20 plus years and has touched, renovated, restored, updated all kinds of courses around Maryland, DC, Virginia. He's done a lot of work in this area. And while we spend a lot of the podcast talking about his work at Woodmont, we do touch on several of his other projects, including some that are upcoming. So really enjoyed getting to chat with Joel for a while and loved Woodmont South. I got a chance to play it for the first time last week as part of the Adaptive Open Media Day. And it's just a really fun course, totally different than its sibling on the same property, Woodmont North. So if you get an opportunity to go out to the Adaptive Open next week, I encourage you to do so. If this is your first time here listening to the podcast, make sure to go to beltwaygolfer.com. Sign up for our free monthly newsletter all about golf around the Capital Region and the DMV. It's free. Just submit your email. Also, make sure you're following us on Instagram. That's our most active social media. But that's it. Nothing else to promote. Let's jump right into the podcast. This is episode 88 with golf course architect, Mr. Joel Wyman of the Wyman Design Group. Enjoy. Welcome, Joel Wyman of Wyman Golf Design. How are you doing this morning?
I'm good, Alex. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate it. As I just mentioned before we're recording, this comes close to a record for the shortest turnaround from when I asked someone to be on the podcast to actually taping it. Just sent you an email last night and with the 4th of July weekend, and I'm sure you're busy. And so I appreciate you coming on. There was one gentleman, I don't know if you know, John Scott Rattan, who's the director of instruction over at Congressional Country Club. A couple of years ago, I asked him to come on and he said, sure, how about in an hour?
And he's got me 60 minutes
is my record.
Well, you wanted to talk about Woodmont, and that's the beginning of next week, and I'm heading out of town, so I figured let's get it done.
Yeah, absolutely. So, as I mentioned in the email, I got an opportunity. I haven't been out to Woodmont a ton. I've seen the North Course a bunch as I've attended the sectional qualifying for several years in a row, and so walked around the North Course. Sure. And on those days, the South Course is, you know, no one's playing it. So several times I've kind of snuck over and walked around for a few holes. But just this Monday for the U.S. Adaptive Open, which is going to be, you know, playing next week on the South Course, they had a media day and I was able to play it. And everyone in our group, including myself, just absolutely loved it. So that's going to be a big chunk of our conversation today is talking about your work at Woodmont.
Okay. Yeah. Woodmont's a special place. I'm a Montgomery County guy. I live about 10, 12 minutes away from the club and they treat me like family. And David Doran, the head pro there, Ryan Seaver, Corey Landon, you know, on the turf team. It's a happy camp and we have a lot of fun. I mean, it took us three off seasons to build the South and renovate the South. And I enjoyed every second of it. In fact, I was really sad when it was over, you know. It's nice. It's rewarding to have it being played now and enjoyed by the members, guests, and in tournaments and events. But that was some of my best times, you know, professional times, you know, renovating that golf course and just, you know, trying to dream up some crazy stuff and trying to figure out how to get it in the ground.
So let's start there. Can you go a little bit deeper into that kind of timeline and process? There was one of the board members from Woodmont actually joined us on media day for the back nine, and I was kind of trying to ask him on, like, you know, when did this finish? And he was kind of like, well, as you just mentioned, it happened over kind of a long period of time.
Well, so a relationship with Woodmont started maybe 12 years ago or so, we did a master plan for the North Course. And renovated the North Course over a few years to in prep. Well, first we did a master plan. We were hired to do a master plan for the South Course. And then the club scored the women's amateur about 4 or 5 years ago. And then the priority went back to the North. The North always got the resources. And we knew that South could be good, but the North was always getting the attention and the resources. But we went and we renovated the North, improved the bunkers and some of the tees and playability. And so the South had to wait a few years after that. And then, you know, so it was about 4 years ago we started the South. 5 years ago we started the South, and it's been open for about 2 years now. And we did about 6 holes a year for 3 years. In between one of those, we took a break during the summer and we built the Loop, which is a crafty little, you know, it's the most fun you can have on 8 acres. Of all the three golf courses, I think the Loop is the most clever and the most fun. You know, it's a different experience. It's pretty.
I didn't realize it was only 8 acres. It looks like a ton of fun. So again, when you're if you're a spectator during the sectional qualifying or really any event on the North Course kind of circumvents the Loop, the short course. So the several times I kind of cut through it and was just kind of marveled at how cool it looked. Have not played it, but the longest hole can't be more than 100 yards, right?
Well, it depends on. So that's what makes it clever is that it's a different golf course every time you play. So we should patent it really, but we had devised a system where it's a color coded system where you just have to know the sequence of the holes that you play. You know, you play red flag, then white flag, then blue flag. You just have to know that the third hole is blue. But on Tuesday it might be in that green, and on Wednesday it might be over there. So we're up to, I think it's 37 different routings on 8 acres, and within each routing, there's a lot of different configurations, you know, by moving some tees around, you know, as you play that configuration. So yeah, it's pretty slick. It's fun. I'll meet you over there. We'll play something soon. Let me know.
I'd love to do that. So does that mean, like, assuming it's always red, white, then blue, the blue is always, is 9 holes, is the third, sixth, and ninth hole. You just have to find where that is in that order.
So it's a color coded system. And you just know the pattern, right? That's your secret decoder link. The third hole might go west on Wednesday, sure. Or go east on, and it just kind of works its way back. And you know, there's 2 holes that are usually the ninth hole, and there's 3 greens that are usually the first green. And it just scatters from there. And so the holes range in length from 45 yards to the shortest to about 130 at the longest. But you can set it up for different difficulty. If it's going to be a busy day, maybe you condense the holes to keep it a little tighter.
And are there exactly 9 greens, or are there less or more than that?
No, there are 8 greens. There's 8 greens, and there's one big triple green. So sometimes you can have one stick in one gigantic green, and sometimes you can have three holes in one gigantic green. It's about 23,000 square feet. You know, the members, they light the facility for their member guest play, and the green's big enough where you can have an 18-hole putting course on that one big elongated green that's pretty closest to 17 fairway, you know, as you mentioned on the north.
Yeah. That's really cool. I'd love to get out there and check it out because just walking around it, you know, I've several times stopped, and if no one's kind of telling you what you're looking at, you're just got, there's a lot going on in a very small area.
It is an adult playground for golf nerds. It's that simple. Yeah,
that's really cool. And so when was that completed?
3 summers ago now.
Got it.
Yeah.
Very cool. Before we get to the South, so you've done what is the work that you've done personally on the North Course there?
Yeah, so we softened and modified probably 3 or 4 of the greens. We renovated all of the bunkers. We shifted a lot of the fairway lines. A little bit of tree management, you know, wines have created some different lines of play and some different options. I mean, the North Course is very difficult. The greens are elevated. The greens are slopey. You know, the bent grass, you know, a lot of tight lies on the bent grass are mounted at like 350, you know, so it's a very demanding golf course. So, you know, we try to make sure that we preserve the teeth of the challenge for the better players for a qualifier event, for instance.
Sure.
But to make sure that it's enjoyable for member play. So we softened some of the greens. We added a lot of fairway runoff areas where, you know, a higher handicap can putt it, chip it, bump it up the hill, you know, and kind of function around the greens because it is so demanding. So we didn't reroute anything. We didn't wholesale rebuild the greens, but we touched a lot of the property.
Yeah. And that's been, you know, you said you started your relationship there 12 years ago. Is that just kind of been a slow process season to season over those 12 years?
Yeah. Yeah, the tortoise wins the race at Woodmont.
Sure.
Yeah.
So the South Course. So the South Course is that's where they're playing the adaptive, you know, the kind of just the chatter within our group there. So we had a foursome that played on Monday for media day. Only one of us had actually played the South prior to the renovation. It was local media personality, Chick Hernandez. He said he had played it a couple times. So he was giving us a couple of the green used to be over here, a little bit of that.
Gotcha.
But you know, how would you describe the South Course before the renovation?
It was a good golf course, but it was the more forgiving of the two for two different reasons. One, because it's shorter, and two, it's got the zoysia grass fairways, so it's easier for I or handicap to kind of nip the ball and get the ball in the air. But saying that, it was kind of one-dimensional. You know, a higher handicap course, you want to be able to run the ball on the ground and advance, you know, run it up to the fairway approach. There wasn't a lot of fairway approaches. All the fairways were kind of neck down. It was more of an aerial attack, which is difficult for higher handicap players. So, you know, our ego, you know, we wanted to build a championship style golf course. We wanted to build something that was going to be, you know, sexy looking. We wanted to build something that was going to challenge the better players at the club and in the region. But we knew that because the North is so difficult, we have to make sure that it's fun and it's playable. The benefit of that is the warm season grass. So their fairways are a combination of Bermuda grass and Bermuda grass. And the cost to maintain that grass is actually cheaper per acre. So you'd be silly, you know, it's in a better effects, wider fairways. Right. So you'd be silly not to plant as many acres as possible. So our playing corridors are really wide. So if you're a high handicap player, you hit it, find it, hit it again. You know, you can slap it up near the green, and there's a lot of smart misses there where you can, we call it the bogey route, you know, or the rabbit route where you can kind of pitch into the green and then two putt for your bogey. I mean, it is a bogey player's golf course. There are some strategic angles for the better players, a lot of tough pins. You know, we had fun with that when we renovated the greens. But it's playable.
What's the grass on the greens? Is it bent?
Yeah, bent grass. Yep. Yeah, all new bent grass. So the greens got expanded and enlarged, bent grass greens. You know, the opening day, you know, two seasons ago, I played in the opening day event, and we had a great foursome. And I shared the cart with a gentleman. He was in his early 90s. He was a local sports personality as well. And he played nine holes with us, and he could play that golf course. He, you know, he played the forward tees, and he hit a 3-wood up near the green, but always playing that bogey route. And he'd pitch into the green, never hit into a bunker, never was required to negotiate a forced carry. And he had a great time. And it was more rewarding watching that 90-year-old gentleman play the golf course that we renovated than almost anything. It was really cool.
It is. You succeeded there. It is a lot of fun. And I'm going to get into the specifics hole by hole. But one question on the grass. So it's interesting. You said it was a combination of zoysia and Bermuda. Because there's two things. One, I mean, I've played a handful of courses with zoysia, and sometimes it really sits up when it's all zoysia, and I didn't necessarily feel that. Maybe that's the combination of Bermuda that kind of allows that. But then on the other hand, I'm curious. So many courses around here that were just Bermuda fairways had a really rough winter, and you didn't really see any of that as well. So I'm curious if that combination of zoysia helped in that angle.
I'm a big proponent of Bermuda grass in this region. It's not the future, it's the present, you know, just for environmental water restrictions, pesticides, fungicides. You will take it on the chin with Bermuda grass maybe once out of every 7 or 8 winters, and we took it on the chin this winter. Not catastrophic loss, but I mean, clubs, you know, probably an acre or two of Bermuda grass got dinged up this past winter.
It really wasn't noticeable.
Woodmont fared better, you know, than most for whatever reason. So the zoysia grass, you know, part of it is Woodmont and their maintenance regime. You know, it's amazing what they can do there. You know, they cut their zoysia grass a little bit shorter than some maybe the zoysia grass that you're used to seeing. So what we did is we have the zoysia grass fairways, and then we have Bermuda grass on the tees and also the green surrounds. So what we found is that the zoysia grass, it's like Velcro. It's a little stickier. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure that the ball rolls and tracks around the greens, and we couldn't get that playability with the zoysia grass. So we converted to Bermuda around the green. So you have the shot option, you know, with the club selection and keeping the ball on the ground. So if you notice, you know, if you go out there for the adaptive next week, you know, about 50 yards short of the green, there'll be a line where if you look closely, you can tell the transition between the two turf types. And that's just so the ball can track and run.
I mean, the overall kind of design of it. I mean, I'm going to go through a few features, not every hole, but a few of the holes, but just the general, like, you know, almost like that fairway grass that a lot of times that is somewhat common these days in renovations, but where it runs from the last green almost right into the next tee, right into the fairway, all the way up to that hole's green. And a lot of times there's no intermediate grass, you know, allows for some creativity where, you know, I putted from way off the green on several holes.
Yeah. It's a little bit of an exaggeration, but it's almost possible if you hit the ball straight at Woodmont, you never have to rock across rough grass. It's almost possible,
right?
Because you have those connections, and there's nothing better than holing out a putt on one green and then walking across fairway turf to peg your ball on the next tee. That's as good as it gets, right?
Yeah.
And you know, some of our features on the South Course, they're in close proximity. So, you know, we've learned that by melding our features together and tying them together, you can actually, you know, don't pretend that your property is bigger than it really is. Just tie things together and let the coziness of the property sell itself. And you get a really cool atmosphere, you know, having like the greens kind of run off with short grass up into the adjacent tees.
Some specifics as we kind of went through the routing, like there was one unusual thing, right? Like running on the first hole, for instance, on the right fairway bunker, big, huge bunker. But one unique thing about it was right in the middle, I was kind of, my drive landed on the left side of the fairway, but I noticed it from over there. I was looking across and I was like, I see a patch of grass like in the middle of the bunker. What is that? And so I walked over and took a picture, and it's almost like you put an island green tuft of grass in the middle of the bunker, which I thought was really unusual. What prompted that?
So Jose Luis Martinez, he was the shaper. He was the artist. You know, the golf course is just as much his as it is mine. And you know, we were just talking about it. We're like, hey, let's build a tuft of grass there. It's a little bit, it's almost like the church pew shot value there. Right. And just make it feel like it was a nose that just broke off like an iceberg and ended up and floated in the middle of the bunker. Gosh darn it, he did it.
I'm wondering how many balls actually land on there.
Yeah.
Sit on it, 'cause it's not big.
Yeah. So the overall style for the golf course, we wanted to replicate or mimic like the Australian sand belt.
Yes.
Right. So you might see a little bit of that there. We wanted the high sand flash. We wanted the shortcut grass and the fairway turf going right into the bunkers. One of the most memorable traits of the Sandbelt golf courses is how they bring their putting surfaces, their putting heights right to the bunker's edge. So a lot of golf courses, you know, you've got your green and then you have your collar and then you have a first cut junior rough and then you have a rough and then you go down into a bunker face, you know, a slope into the bunker. Well, you know, we figured out a way at Woodmont, and part of that is, you know, Ryan Sievert, the director of grounds, like he has such an open mind and he is a big kid himself. And he says no to nothing. And we just figured it out. And, you know, he was just fabulous to work with. But yeah, we actually have our green surfaces extend, the putty surfaces extend all the way to the sand edge of the bunker. So you do have that Australian sand belt feel. It's a very clean, classy look that nobody else in the region has. I mean, it's
not really, not only does it look great though, but it can be really intimidating on tee shots and approaches when you're hitting the green. I'm thinking like the first one were really two things. One, on the fifth green, which is one of the coolest greens on the course, shortish par four up to the right, but it's the first time you see not only is the green surface cut down right up to the bunker's edge where there's no collar, but the bunker almost impedes the green like someone took an apple bite out of the green. So, you know, our pin was front left, and there was almost a scenario where you could be kind of back left and have that cut out of the bunker in your path that you'd have to putt around. I mean, it was really cool.
So we like if you're playing billiards, right, you know, you don't want to get corner hooked. So that's what we always say, watch the corner hook. Right. So we try to make sure that there's a slingshot route that the gravity will do its thing and have the ball track towards the hole.
But then that also gets in your head, because then I'm jumping ahead to say the par 3/8, which is, you know, I don't know if you refer to it as a volcano hole, but almost looks like a little bit of that where it's just kind of a straight ahead par 3, but it's surrounded by the bunkers. And you can see from the tee that some of them do that same kind of cutting into the green, and you've got the memory of the hole of that bunker or two in the previous holes, and it becomes a really intimidating tee shot.
Right. And also, so we wanted to make sure that it was a stern test for the better players as well. So, you know, usually you're 7 feet or three paces on before you can cut a cut from the edge of the green. So if you get rid of all of the collar and the first cut on the rough, that means you can start your first, you know, your three paces or your 7 feet closer to the bunker. So you have automatically more tucked hole locations. So you can set the golf course up really difficult because the edge of your green starts at the sand's edge, which is pretty cool, pretty unique. Yeah.
And backing up, because this was another one that everyone in our group thought was just a really cool hole, and seems like there were some very significant changes on where the green was, is the par five third hole, which, you know, from the tee box doesn't look like much. It looks, you know, straightforward. Okay, there's a green on there. And it was funny, everybody in our foursome, it was maybe the only hole of the day where all four of us had perfect drives right in the middle of the fairway. And they had us all playing the white, so it wasn't super long. Okay. But it was a kind of a hilarious hole, because we all hit our, so you got water left, you got a pond left, but the bunker kind of, you know, is angled left away from you along the pond. You can't see a whole lot of it from the fairway, and there's a bunker back right, but there's a whole bunch of fairway to the right of the green. All four of us hit our shots, and I don't think anybody loved their approach shot. You know, there were some curse words or people, you know, kicking at the grass thinking they didn't have a good shot. We get up to the green, two of us are inside 10 feet and the other two are putting from the fringe, because we all went right of the green and it all just kind of funnels. Granted, they had the front pin, which is a little bit, certainly a lot easier than the back pin, but everything kind of funneled down to this. It was just, everybody loved it. I mean, it's just a really cool hole.
And that was an instance where the old South course, the green was high up on the hill and it was perched so you couldn't run the ball up, and the green wasn't talking to the pond's edge at all. But it was really kind of discriminating because it required, you know, a short iron wedge shot to hit stick and spin, you know, right there on the green. And now you have this gravity, we call it a feeder slope, a gravity fed approach where the ball can kind of carom in from right to left. And, you can make three there, or, you know, you can make seven easy, you know, if you overcook it, it goes into the pond. But they took it easy on you with the front hole location. Back buried hole location is a different animal because the back bunker comes into play. That green is probably only 12 paces wide, but I bet it's four clubs deep, right? And so it really does play differently depending on how it's set up that day.
Sure.
There's some variety.
I'm guessing, but correct me if I'm wrong, because there's a fair number of ponds and water on the South course was any of that changed or moved during the renovation?
All existing ponds, all old farm ponds. We didn't touch any of that. You get into that and it just opens another can of worm with permitting and things like that.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So next week's Adaptive Open, this is going to be the first kind of spotlight on the South course. Fans are invited to attend. People will be walking the course, probably the most eyes on the course. How do you expect it to play? But this is also an unusual, it's not your traditional tournament. You've got eight different impairment categories, yeah. You know, some seeded players, all sorts of different types of golfers in the Adaptive Open. What do you expect to see next week?
It's a fantastic event. I mean, it's what golf's all about, right? And it's just, that's the beauty of the game. I'm proud that Woodmont's hosting that. And Woodmont, the South course takes really good dramatic pictures. They're really bold with the sand flash and the shadows. It's striking, really. And it looks mean. It looks menacing. It looks difficult. But we're going to get wheelchairs in those bunkers, right? So it looks hard and it plays easy. You know, so the bunkers are not as intimidating as they appear. But also our playing corridors and our fairway widths are so wide that you can play away from the bunkers and play safe. And you know, it can be fun for the highest of high handicappers. So I'm excited. Yeah, I'm excited for it to get a little exposure for people to see it. And it, you know, in the end, it's a fun golf course. And there's a lot of half par holes out there. You know, half par golf, you know, like a gettable par, you know, gettable, drivable par four, or a really difficult stern par three, you know, both are par three and a halves. Right. But the aggregate of seven strokes is much more interesting than two traditional golf holes of traditional challenge. And we have that hole after hole at Woodmont, which kind of, you know, it's a really good match play course as well for that reason.
Yeah. 14 is a great example of that, where it's a shortish par four. When I got up there, it proved to be longer than I thought, but you've got this great bunker that's kind of a little deceiving from the tee box that cuts into the fairway, but it's really about 40 yards short of the green. And depending what tee you're playing from, that hole is anywhere from, I don't know, 290 to 320 or something.
Yeah. 14 is the wildest hole that I've ever built. And that green, you know, that left greenside bunker takes a gigantic bite out of the apple on that green.
Yeah.
And I have to admit, I was a little squirmish. And I kept asking Ryan, are we good? And Ryan Sievert's like, don't worry about it. We're good. you know. But you know, it can be playable too, and there's some backboards that you can make a two there, or even a one coming and going, but with the different backboards and pitches on the greens there. But that was a lot of fun to kind of conceive and think through. It's a sporty little hole.
Yeah, there are the backboards. There is a lot of that. There was we experienced that a couple times accidentally, a couple times on purpose, and a couple times after we were done, we were just kind of rolling balls around to see how they rolled. It's gonna be exciting to see how these play. One question for you on a term you used a couple times, and I realized that my own golf ignorance, maybe there'll be some listeners. When you say that the term sand flash, what do you mean by that?
So that's just when the sand rises up and, you know, up the face to the bunker, right? So it's the visibility of the sand, how it sits on the hill or on the face.
Got it.
You know, not all bunkers have sand flash. We call them flat bottom bunkers, you know, with a grass face on them. You know, the south definitely shows the sand, right? And it's a nice framing element to the greens, and it allows for an artful tie. And we have very little rough touching our bunkers. Most of the time, our bunkers are swimming 360 degrees in the shortcut fairway turf. Which is a nice compliment. So again, it looks crazy and mean, but it's very maintainable because it's all machine mode around the outside edge of all the bunkers. So it's practical as well.
So is your work at Woodmont totally complete, or is there always work to be done?
It's never done, right? And it's never done. I mean, we're substantial completion. How's that? But I think there's, you know, we'll probably learn some things this week, right? You know, and you know, the club there is pretty hands-on. They tweak a few things here and there. And you know, I talk to those guys probably once a month or so. And, you know, just, hey, what if, right? That's why we start our conversations. What if, you know, if we're going to change or tweak anything? And that's part of the fun, right? It's an evolution, and we're never done. And that's how you continue to improve. And that's why Woodmont is the great club that it is.
Yeah, I'm excited for the tournament. Excited to see how it all plays out. Let's shift a little bit, just kind of your beyond Woodmont and your career a little bit. Get to know Joel Wyman a little bit. So you and feel free to correct me here, or I'd love to hear about it. But you only just recently started your own firm, Wyman Golf Design. Is that accurate? After being at McDonald and Sons and McDonald Design Group for 20 plus years.
Yeah. So I grew up in Northern New York near the Canadian border. Not great for the golf business, but I love the game. And, you know, I started to realize, you know, I was a big fish in a really little pond up there. And I wasn't quite the player that I thought I was. And you realize you're not going to make a living hitting a golf ball. But I always loved architecture, you know, and I was able to marry the two. So I got a degree in landscape architecture from Cornell University. And they allowed, you know, I set up lots of independent studies, you know, including, you know, Tom Doak taught at Design Studio for 6 credits, right? Like, it was a great experience. And I moved down to DC and started working with McDonald and Sons. And that was in 1997, 1998. And after about a year or so, we started doing a lot of design build work and had a lot of success. And yeah, for 25, 26 years, we renovated a lot in the Mid-Atlantic, but a lot up and down the East Coast. And we built new golf courses, but we really specialized in master planning and long-term implementation programs like Woodmont's programs, well, at McDonald and Sons. Actually, yeah, my 2-year anniversary for Wyman Golf Design was yesterday, and I didn't even celebrate. Yeah, it was July.
Congratulations.
2 years ago. Yeah, thank you. And yeah, you know, it was time. You know, I'm kind of a chronic micromanager. And, you know, not only was, you know, I was designing things, but also, you know, managing the construction. And it got to be overwhelming. You know, we were, I think the last full season before I left McDonald, our design build team, you know, we worked with 54 different clients in 1 year. And they weren't all big projects, right? Some was consulting, but most of it was construction work. And just the logistics of the crews and the equipment and, you know, just building it. And, you know, and I wasn't able to concentrate on what I really love, which is the design work. So now I can just I'm just a big kid playing in the sandbox and having all the fun.
At McDonald, when there's two sides of that firm, you know, the builder and the design group, is the design group always involved in every project, or some of them? No,
it was about half, you know, about half or so. McDonald would build for other architects with half the company. And then we would do our design build work. And it was great. I had so much fun. But to be able to have control over all components of the project, you know, to communicate the design and then work on the budget and the schedule, and then and then all facets of the implementation, and then to be able to shake the customer's hand in the end after keeping your, I mean, it was the most rewarding. It's a great way to build a golf holes. But I do enjoy the new role and the new situation. We just hired Cole Baldwin, came on board. He's a civil engineering grad from Virginia Tech, and he's about a year and a half now. He's a scratch player. So it's really good to kind of have his love of the game with us every day. And we're having fun. We're bebopping up and down the East Coast and having a hoot.
How does that change when you are purely a design group? Does that change how you approach projects or bids, or does it open up more opportunities? How does that change things?
Yeah, it means you can get more work into the ground because you're not tied down with logistics of building. But I think we have the benefit of having the experience of all the construction, right?
Sure.
So you're a better designer if you're a builder first. It's that simple. And we've done our fair share of building. You know,
sure.
over the last couple of decades. But yeah, so your perspective is strong because you have the construction experience, and it does open up more doors, right? The design build model is a little bit hard to explain and communicate because it is different than what most people are used to. And we're actually finding that it's easier to get really nice design commissions when you play by the rules of everybody else.
Sure.
So we're having a lot of success over the last couple of years.
Did, you know, there's another fairly famous alumni who kind of seems like went a similar path, but I'm curious, was he an employee of yours or worked underneath you? Andrew Green, who has achieved some serious success out of his own.
Yeah.
I mean, he kind of did a similar path. Am I wrong?
Yeah. We worked together for 10, 12 years or whatever. Yeah. He's doing great. Yeah, he's a jet setter. He's flying all over the country doing some really good stuff. Really, that's really fun to see. And we're all really proud of everything that he's accomplished.
Sure. Being based in the Mid-Atlantic, you know, obviously the goal is to expand your portfolio and get jobs and get work anywhere and everywhere. But specifically in the Mid-Atlantic, you know, hopefully this changes with this current golf boom we're in. But there's not a ton of new golf courses being built. So I imagine so much of the work is looking at, you know, all these courses that were built 20, 30, 50, 60, 70 years ago, that a lot of which haven't been renovated, and a lot of the bids and jobs are renovations or restorations or getting things up to date versus potential projects for completely new courses.
Right. We call them home games, and I'm spoiled that I've had a lot of home games in, you know, my career. When we were starting out, you know, we had a young family, two boys, and my wife's got a good career. And I was trying to be home as much as possible. I didn't want to go down airplanes. And that's why the design build and having all the local clients that we had with McDonald, the McDonald Design Group, was such a good fit. Yeah, I could see four or five jobs under construction and get home, you know, in time to have dinner on the table, right? Because my wife had the morning shift and I've got the afternoon shift. And it worked out really, really well. You know, now our bigger projects, you know, I was on a plane again yesterday, right? Like a lot more travel these days. But you're right. There's not a lot of new builds, you know, in the Mid-Atlantic. But we're blessed to have, you know, so many great clients and local clients, you know, the Baltimore Beltway, DC Beltway, Northern Virginia, the Eastern Shore. I did a talk for the Maryland State Golf Association, their year-end awards thing last year. And I, just for giggles, I can't quite remember the number, but I added up how many clubs or golf courses that I had worked on in the state of Maryland. And it was almost 70 just in the state of Maryland, you know, and I'm that means a lot to me, right? And it's a lot of friendships, and we share a really great industry and a really great group of people, and just the friendships and the laughter and the stories. Somehow I transitioned into one of the older guys in every room that I stand in now. I used to be just a kid, but I'll cherish all of those memories for all of those projects year after year.
You've got a great little piece on your website. I think it's called the Designer's Dozen, that I'm assuming are kind of like 12 projects that you're, I don't know if these are like 12 that you're especially proud of or yeah. How you define that.
They were, yes, we selected those. They were 12, there might be 13 just to be tricky. Okay. Like a baker's dozen.
Baker's dozen.
Right. But they were clients of ours that we wanted to include as a testimonial, you know, people in the business and people that have meant a lot to us, and have helped us along the way. And that's how that was selected. It was more so, the people that we worked alongside and the testimonials that are involved with us, with those 12 or 13 clubs.
Well, some other ones just to chat quickly about some of the other projects that I believe you've done recently that I think would interest some listeners. I think I got the logo right. I can't see in the camera right now, but you're wearing an Argyle polo right now.
Yeah.
Is that Argyle just recently did a renovation, right? Yeah, over their fairways and tee boxes.
Yeah, we just tackled. So yeah, I live in Olney. I'm a member of Norbeck and Argyle. And you want pressure renovate a place that you're a member at, right? Like, you got to be careful when you go for dinner. But yeah, I mean, Argyle, you know, the transformation of Argyle was pretty spectacular. A lot of new tees, all new bunkers, and then converting to Bermuda grass from the Rye Poa fairways into Bermuda grass. And like you mentioned at Woodmont, you know, we've got a lot of those fairway grassing tie-ins from one hole to another, and it's really clever and fun. But Argyle now is a completely different golf experience. And because we work so much locally, we have to make sure that every golf course has its own character, its own identity. And we're only going to get design commissions if we can tell them. We work at Columbia and Bethesda and Woodmont, right? But we have to make sure that each club tells its own story. So Columbia doesn't look like Bethesda. Bethesda doesn't look like Woodmont. You wouldn't know the same guy did it all. So, you know, that's our goal. And, you know, even at Woodmont, right, the north feels different than the south, and the south feels different than the loop, right? So we even broke it down into even more, sure. So Argyle now it's its own beast, right? It has a different character than anybody else in the region.
Did you, were the bunkers part of that renovation at Argyle?
Yes.
Or no? They were.
Yes. Yep. We did high sand flashed bunkers as well. You know, there's new products now that we can kind of prevent washouts, better billy bunkers.
So how do you find, because another one I want to mention, and I haven't played it, but I did take some aerial photography of it about 6 months ago that I believe I saw on your website was you, Country Club of Fairfax.
Country Club of Fairfax, yeah.
Yeah. That bunkering over there is really impressive. It's really cool. There's some like symmetry and hard lines and
at least from the
sky, it looks cool.
Yeah. Country Club. So that's a flat bottom bunker, almost like a, you know, almost has like a Seth Rainer old school rugged geometric right. feel to it. But again, I mean, we're fortunate that, you know, their competitors are International, Westwood, Springfield, Belhaven, right? And so we had to make sure that Fairfax was different than the other three or four. Yeah. And that was the character that we ran with. And it really does complement that property. Mike Owens, the superintendent's there, is doing a great job running with it. He's really embraced it.
One of the benefits you must have, though, is correct me if I'm wrong, but you've done work on all or most of those ones you just mentioned. So you can kind of probably as much as anybody how to differentiate because you know those other courses
so
well.
Yeah, those are ours. And it helps to know the market as well. Like, each club, the membership, they have their identity, their personality, their maintenance budget. You have to know what the expectations are as far as what they can, how they can maintain it, make sure that we're not over designing for the budget. Yeah. It all goes into the computer before we spit out the design style.
Yeah. Sure. Interesting. You mentioned Belhaven. And I can edit this out if it's not public, but I believe I was out there for the Belhaven four ball and the pro mentioned that you were tasked to do an upcoming renovation there. Is that accurate?
Yeah, so the design is done and we're just working through some more paperwork and hopefully, you know, we hope to break ground sometime soon, but that'll be a fun one. That superintendent there's a good friend of ours and it'll be a rewarding project.
Yeah. There's like you said, you've touched 70 Maryland courses. You've got a lot on your website. I certainly encourage any listeners to go to your website. What is the website? Give us the plug on the website.
WymanGolfDesign.com, I believe.
Wyman Golf Design, but it breaks down a lot of different courses. For instance, another one that again, I actually played this years ago, but haven't been out. That it seems like you're slowly working through a master plan is Talbot Country Club out on the Eastern Shore in Eastern Maryland.
Yeah. That is a sneaky good golf course. It's quite flat, but it's straightforward. It's there out in front of you. The superintendent there, you know, he is a construction company in himself that masquerades as a superintendent that mows grass. Like, they're all in, and we go and we renovate about two holes a year every fall. And it's a lot of fun and really rewarding there. You know, a lot of drainage issues. You know, the Eastern Shore has a lot of different challenges than we have here on the Western Shore. But Talbot's a special place with a really nice membership. They get it. They get golf.
So here's a off the wall question for you. So you're living in Montgomery County, like you say, you live in Olney. It seems a lot of your portfolio, understandably, is private golf, country clubs around the area that have the resources to do these updates pretty frequently. Montgomery County has 9 public golf courses as part of the Montgomery County Golf, and they're all solid golf courses, but a lot of them haven't been significantly updated in a long time. Any of those you'd love to get your hands on?
Well, you know, we do some consulting and we've renovated some, you know, for the Revenue Authority. We finished some renovation work at Poolsville. That's a strong.
Oh, golf. You did? Okay.
Yeah, that's a strong golf course. They provide a great, what a great product that they turn out.
The work you did at Poolsville, was that kind of in conjunction with the opening of the winery and the rebranding of the Cross Vines?
Yeah, which is very slick. Yeah. You know, it's a shame to see Redgate close. You know that was a bummer here locally,
especially since it's still sitting there. It's basically just a dog park at this point.
We take a lot of pride in working where the quasi government Northern Virginia Regional Park Authority, the Revenue Authority, you know, and then some other privately owned public golf courses. We enjoy that work very, very much too, and we take a lot of pride in that work as well.
Excellent. Well, it seems like you've really become kind of the go-to. Obviously, this is certainly not overnight. You've been doing it for 20 plus years, but have become the go-to architect or designer here in the DC region in the Mid-Atlantic. So it's certainly well-earned. Before I get you out of here, from a broader sense, I'm just kind of curious, going beyond the Beltway, beyond the Mid-Atlantic, are there some golf courses that you've seen, whether in person or not, that kind of inspire you or you look to, you know, when trying to be creative and applying your work to some of these golf courses?
Well, not to over-design, and sometimes we take ourselves too seriously, right? Golf needs to be fun. Two of the more fun things in the state of Maryland that I've, you know, renovating Rolling Road up in Catonsville in Baltimore, Country Club of Maryland is a golf course that you could play every day for the rest of your life and never grow tired of it. Well, those are two really good examples. My favorite golf course on the planet's Marion, right? It could be flawless. It's a flawless routing. And, you know, we're doing a lot of work in, Connecticut, Westchester, a lot in Long Island, North Shore, Long Island. And if you want to be inspired about golf and golf course architecture, take a week. And I mean, you can almost walk from course to course to course in Long Island, and each one has a story to tell and a lot of history. And it's inspiring, right? And to be able to work on those properties with those people who appreciate and know what they have. I mean, the golf IQ up there is very strong. It's really rewarding. So we're starting to do a lot in New York, and it's a fabulous market to be in, other than the traffic, right? You got to get through the city and back, a couple times a week. That's rough. But there's so much good golf on the North Shore, Long Island. It's heaven. It's heaven.
Yeah, I'm loosely trying to plan, because the U.S. Open's returning to Long Island next year, and so hopefully maybe around that time get up there before it gets too crowded. It sounds like you're heading out of town for the fourth. Are you able to get out to the Adaptive at all next week? Or
I'm trying to work on my schedule now. I promised Dave and Ryan that I would get there for an afternoon, because we're never done. They're like, hey. You know, they've got the boys amateur coming up in a couple of years. We got a couple ideas. When you come out next week, we got to talk. So we're never done.
Will the boys amateur be on the north or the south? North. Got it. Okay.
But so come on, we got to look at a couple things when you come out next week. So I promise that I might be there. I just got to figure out which day.
Excellent. Well, congratulations again. Huge fan of the course. Everybody in our group was raving about it, and really just ton of fun to play. And I certainly can't wait to see how the Adaptive golfers take it on next week.
Okay. Thanks, Alex. I appreciate you saying so, and I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Excellent. Thanks again for coming on short notice. Have a great 4th of July, and thanks for coming on the podcast.
I appreciate it. Thanks.